When my older brothers and I went off to college, my younger brother was left home alone. So my parents got him a dog. It's a good substitute for a brother. You fight less often with dogs than you do with brothers. And the dog that they got him was a very beautiful Siberian Husky that, yes, I'll report to, he'll be pleased to know that you appreciate this long gone animal. But he was a very beautiful dog and a sweet dog, and he only had one problem, which was it didn't matter where he was in the house. As soon as someone opened the door, he was gone. And would run around the neighborhood all the time. And the neighbors came to hate us. Because not only would he tear through their yards, but we were always driving around looking for our dog. And I remember we even brought him to one of these dog obedience schools. And the instructor said, "You've got a Siberian Husky, there's nothing we can do. That's what they do. They're supposed to run. We can't really train it out of them. I would suggest you be careful when you open the door." So we were, but you know, it's really hard to always be careful. And you don't see the dog around, and you open the door, and before you know it, it's out the door. I thought of this today for the first time in a while, because what happened was, as you would expect, at the beginning, neighbors were very cooperative. They knew the dog, they saw the dog, sometimes, every now and then. I mean, at a certain point, he would get tired and jump in a car and they would bring him home. But we noticed as time went on, neighbors got less and less likely to help us retrieve our wayward dog. And what happened was, when you would say to them, "So did you see the dog?" they would say, "No." "We don't know from the dog, we've never seen the dog. If I see him, I'll give you a call." Which is another way of saying, "Leave me alone." In the Torah portion this morning, it says specifically that if you see something lost, you have to return it. And the rabbis add, even if it's lost again and again and again. And that made me think of our dog. But the phrasing that is used is even more significant in some ways than the directive that is given. It says, "You may not hit alem," which really, I mean, they translate it as "you may not be indifferent," which is a good colloquial translation. But it really means, as the classical commentators translate it, "you may not hide yourself from that which is lost." And I think in that is a world of wisdom about Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and the month of Elul. Because that's what happens, for example, all the time, and I do it constantly when I'm driving San Vicente and about to turn onto Wilshire, and on that corner there is always a ragged-looking individual with a sign asking for money. And you know what I do? I hide myself. I don't look at them. I don't make eye contact. I pretend that person is not there. Because I know if I acknowledge them, then I either have to do something about it, or I have to acknowledge to them I'm not doing anything about this. So better to lock your doors and drive by and hide yourself. Not from an object that is lost, but in this case, from a person that is lost. And I realized that we do this all the time. How often do we see something that is lost, literally or figuratively, and walk by it because, after all, someone else will find the dog? It's not our problem. It's not our dog. And one of the reasons that we do it is if we don't, we have to not only confront the fact itself, but we have to confront how often we hide ourselves. How often do we realize that something needs our help, but we don't wish to be bothered, so we don't say, you know what, I should do this, but I'm not going to because I really don't want to be bothered. Because that makes us feel bad about ourselves. So instead, we just act like the problem isn't there. We say to our children as we drive by, don't look at that person. But why do we say that? Because we're training them to hide themselves. And we arrange the world in order to enable ourselves to do it. There are now more studies than I can count by social scientists that examine how people conduct themselves in arguments. Whether they're personal arguments or political arguments, it doesn't matter. This is what we all do. We take in all the data that reinforces what we believe, and we dismiss all the data that contradicts what we believe. So, when you say to your spouse or your child, don't scream, and they say, well, you were screaming, we say, yes, but you, thereby acknowledging in theory, but really not grappling with the fact that we're telling other people to do exactly that which we do all the time. Or you will say, as you walk into your bedroom, why are you watching that junk on television? And then close the door and turn on other junk. But we don't deal with what psychologists call the cognitive dissonance, right? With the contradiction inside ourselves. Instead, we hide ourselves from the fact that we don't act the way we should, or even the way we say that we act when we're presenting ourselves to other people. One thing about me, I don't lie to people. How often have you either said that or heard people say that? And yet, I will tell you, at the risk of offending you, I have never met a human being who never lies to people. And if you are such a person, you might be the only example in the history of the world. But we don't like to think of ourselves as someone who says, for example, I really can't, I have a meeting now, and then goes home and eats lunch. We don't like to think of ourselves as that kind of person, and so we say, I can't stand the fact that they lied. That's the sort of thing I never do. And when you're confronted with the fact that you do it, you find reasons to distinguish yourself from the other person. In other words, you hide yourself from the reality of the situation. Again and again and again, this is true. And if you pay attention to the next time you're in a really serious argument, it may be hard to do at the moment, but later on, if you go back and listen, you will recognize that it is very hard, but essential, to acknowledge the fact that all truth and all justice and all goodness isn't really on your side. But we hide ourselves. And the Torah demands that we don't. That in fact, sometimes, when you're in an argument with your children, they're actually right. Now, you don't have to tell them. Don't get me wrong. Let's not go overboard. But you need to know. That sometimes, when we drive by somebody, it's not because we really know that that person just doesn't take initiative and is lazy and so on, but it's because we can't stand to confront the fact that there are unfortunate people in the world that we're not ready to help. That when we dismiss the conduct of another person, whether a public person or a private person who's done something that we don't like, we should be prepared to recognize that in our own lives, we do the same thing. In other words, tshuva, repentance, begins with honesty. And honesty means that you can't hide. That if you decide not to return the dog, just say, I'm not doing it because it's too much trouble, at least to yourself. Not because they should be more responsible and I'm really teaching them a lesson. That idea that we're not supposed to hide from ourselves is at the very basis of the confessional. Why is it that we hit our chests and we confess to all sorts of things that we haven't done? Part of it is because there's the collective, Klal Yisrael, and we are guilty of things collectively that each individual hasn't necessarily done. But the other part of it is because sometimes we've done things and we haven't even thought about it until all of a sudden we look at that sin and we beat our chest and we realize, yeah, I have done that. It's not true that only other people do that. I do it too. And so the Torah insists we do not hide from the reality of who we are and who we are not. Now, none of us, not me, not you, not anybody else, is going to be completely, consistently honest about who we are. We tell ourselves what one social psychologist, Ernest Becker, called vital lies. Lies that keep us going sometimes. But it is a religious task to try to be as honest as we can, not to hide, to look at our souls and to listen and to pay attention both to what we say and to what others say. So when someone loses something or when someone is lost, it's not just that you can't be indifferent. It's that you can't put your hand over your eyes and pretend you don't see. Because at the beginning of this sermon, when I said the guy or the woman who always stands there at that corner of San Vicente and Wilshire, all of you nodded. Yeah, we've seen that same. So that when we say that we don't see, we're not telling the truth. We do see. We just don't admit it. We don't acknowledge it. We don't do anything about it. But the beginning of tshuva, of repentance, is to admit that you see, to acknowledge what it is that's going on around you, not to hide. So I hope for all of us in the year to come that we will see a little more both of what goes on inside ourselves and in the world. Give other people a little more credit sometimes and ourselves sometimes a little less. And that as individuals and as a people, we'll take one more step out of hiding. Shabbat shalom. Shabbat shalom.